Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Martinez, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today, so sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have two great guests here to introduce. It is Noelle Noelia and Carla Grow. Carla Grow, she is an art dealer and the founder of Ivey Fine Art and the Ivey Art Foundation, developing culture and philanthropic initiatives between Palm Beach and New York and Europe. And then Dr. Noelia, she's an astrophysicist and TEDx speaker. She calls us to protect our night sky and rethink satellites for a sustainable future. So very happy to welcome both of them, and let's get to catch up things first with a song selected by Carla. Carla, welcome here in the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Annabelle. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm very inspired by that what you do. And without asking you, I would like to give a small introduction. And I know it could be an hour talking about what you do and what you have done. And it really inspires me. And I think it will inspire also our listeners. You are the founder of EY Fine Art and EY Art Foundation. You trained in archaeology and Egyptology, and you've worked internationally between Europe and the United States. Through your galleries, you have supported a group of international artists, many working cross-culture and shaped by migration and displacement, about a program between New York and Palm Beach. You are now focusing on developing the EY Art Foundation, a nonprofit initiative dedicated to education, cultural exchange, and socially engaged projects. Really impressive. And I would like to start with you from that. What is originally your and have been your focus? Archaeology and Egyptology is something where I think many, many children in one age during a time, they're really focused on that. They want to find something from dinosauria and want to find old patterns and get really crazy about that. What first drew you to the study of ancient cultures?
I think exactly what you just mentioned. It was around four, five when I don't know what gave me the idea, but that's when I announced I'm going to be an archaeologist, and it sort of never left me. And around after graduating, I wasn't sure what to do, and then one of my oldest friends reminded me and said, "Hey, isn't that what you always said you were going to do? Why don't you just go through with it?" And I thought, "Yeah, why not?" And so, and I never regretted it. I really felt that not only did I find my people there, I've really found my tribe with the other archaeologists. It also, I think it set me on the right path, that really led to so many great developments that otherwise, if I had chosen something more conservative or more safe, it would never have led me there.
Do you want to
So,
share with us maybe one experience or one story of this time where you worked in this field? Maybe what was most challenging or most bringing you great new ideas on things by dealing with ancient cultures?
I would say what you realize the most, especially when you go on excavations, is that at some point you get a little bit too old for it, because you get up really early, and then sometimes you hang upside down in a trench. And I mean, I always loved it, but it's definitely a challenging lifestyle, and you're sharing your room with maybe two, three other people, and after a while you realize, wow, I mean the field work is really for those who are very committed. Not something necessarily that you want to do for the rest of your life, but yeah, that's definitely it's I absolutely adored it, and it's great to be with your colleagues, and you're on campaign for the 6 to 8 weeks, so it's a great adventure, and it really does feel as good as people imagine when you find something. When you find the most exciting thing that I ever found was the wall decorations, the painted walls in a Roman building. But still, it gives you sort of that feeling you always imagined as a child.
I can imagine when I was a child, my biggest wish was to come to Herculaneum and figuring out what is there left from the volcano, and if I could see some leftovers from the people living there, maybe a coin or something which reminds me of the life at that time. And it felt really like a big, big secret to me, which I wanted to keep, which I wanted to keep and share, but I wanted to step into that. And I mean, I imagine you being there, standing in front of these drawings or these paintings in a cave or somewhere. Is this also what brought you then to the art business?
What brought me to the art business was, I would say, sheer necessity. I realized that to turn archaeology into a career would be very, very challenging. So I wanted to do something on the side, and I was really on the verge of quitting. And then a good friend of mine said, "Don't quit. You can actually do something that sort of complements this." And he got me in touch with an art dealer, an antiquities dealer in Switzerland. And basically, it was him trying to keep me from quitting archaeology, and so I started working for this antiquities dealer in Basel while I was still studying, and that sort of gave me the, I would say, the courage to go through with it, because I thought, okay, I can always fall back on the art trade if I if archaeology doesn't work out.
And I mean, many art dealer focus on something. There are dealer who sell everything, but often it's conducted or it's combined to that what you are originally also interested in, or what drives you further in your other parts of life. One friend of mine, for example, he always lives has lived in the past, so no surprise he's selling paintings from the 700 1600 century and knows a lot about it. And if I talk with him about contemporary art, which is my favorite, he looks at me like, what is that? Is there also something which brought you into a special direction of art dealing?
So when I first started the gallery, that was in 2019, the first exhibitions that we had, I did have ancient art there too, but right from the beginning, I combined it with contemporary art. And one of our first exhibitions was with a Cuban artist. And that sort of started this whole, the collective of artists that I'm working with now. And I would say that set me on a path. It was more of a coincidence almost. It was not really my specialty. I had worked for other galleries and art dealers. I was not only involved in ancient art, but I really had very little to do with contemporary art. But what really convinced me were those Cuban artists, because they paint more like, I would say, classic modern or post-war painters, being completely isolated in Cuba. So it was really their style and the substance of their work that drew me to contemporary art. Because I do understand that people are a little bit alienated by a lot of contemporary art that's circulating today. But it's definitely not the case with these Latin American artists that I work with. That's it's a different approach, and like I said, it reminded me a lot more of post-war European art than it does of like contemporary, let's say, US art, or like what comes out of Berlin right now.
Yeah, interesting. Would you say that painting which speaks to you, painting which is also on the ground of some political circumstances, is touching your touching you more, or is it more interesting to you than just say just like something where somebody tries to make some nice art, art which is just for being looking good, bringing some good colors together and forms?
So what surprises people a lot about Cuban art, for instance, is that it's mostly very apolitical. And what most of these artists sort of express is more like feelings of alienation, like feelings about the human condition, or like people, things that we can all relate to. And like a lot of them, they do paintings about family, about belonging, about feeling, feeling lost in a new culture. So it's also, I got that feedback a lot when we had exhibitions in New York, where people came in and they said, "Oh, this is really expressing what I have always felt in terms of loneliness," or in terms of, somebody called it emotional homelessness, but could never really express. And I think this is the strongest art you can find, when it expresses something so universal about the human condition, or about something that we all feel, that it brings us together and makes us all feel more human and more like collective humanity and less separated. And so people do ask, and they say, "Oh, so these are Cuban artists, and they painted in that regime." Most art is state-sponsored over there, but we do have artists that were sort of forced to work in rum factories, or that were not officially state-sponsored. So a lot of their art is sort of filled with a certain urgency, because they had to like paint with coffee or with whatever material they could find. So there's a sort of found object art. There is the sort of textile, the collages. So people are really fascinated by this sort of unstoppable human urge to express yourself artistically despite your circumstances. So I think this is what resonates the most with people, that they see that this is not something that can be suppressed, no matter how terrible the regime is. This will always find a way and sort of come through, no matter what you have to use, or even if you have to use garbage and paint with coffee, it will still find a way to express itself.
And would you say that each culture has an own signature, even if the people are all individuals and, of course, coming from different backgrounds, as a kind of, let's say, Cuban art?
I think what is fascinating is that with Cuba, you have a culture that has been almost hermetically sealed from all the most recent developments that we have gone through, because internet is almost unattainable because it's just too expensive over there. And they obviously have no access to all of the media that we consume, or very little, or sort of. Exiled Cubans have to pay for it. So what you have is something that is very unique in that it reminds me almost like a time capsule, how it was like before we got so inundated with media and with sort of all of these like new images that are sort of overloading your bandwidth every day. So there's something very I would say unadulterated about this art, like specifically coming out of Cuba.
Interesting. Would you say that it's that people like more that if art is apolitical or political from the people who buy that?
Apolitical.
Because
People
it's not.
really want to connect. That's my experience. They want to connect on a human level. A lot of times, the collector is asking specifically to meet the artist. I've had wonderful encounters where I don't know, were both crying because they connected so deeply over a painting. And the lady said, "You know, I had breast cancer and I connected deeply with this painting." And then the artist would say, "Well, actually, I painted this while my sister was going through that." So there's really very touching scenes when people deeply connect, like almost non-verbally without knowing the background. And that's what I find people are looking for the most, the sort of human connection.
Wow, that sounds very spiritual and also showing how connected we are, even if the digital connection is sometimes keeping us away from the connection we have on the other frequency side, right? I mean, let me ask you one question before we go into the break. And I wanted to ask something different, but when you told me this now, it keeps me really, or it tells me that we should go once again into this. Would you say that art could be something which connects us back to ourselves from that what we might have lost because of information overload and information gap, which brings us a digitization?
I think so. And this is really just from observation. I would say you're spot on with what you just said. Yeah.
I think this is a good last sentence for the break or going into the break. We have a break of approximately 2 minutes and see each other back in 2 minutes. So stay tuned and I'm looking forward to our next part of the talk.
UK House Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, Carlo, we just talked about what painting can do, that painting could awake feelings, that a painting can bind us without words and brings together things which are unsaid but felt, and that painting can be a kind of medium then in the situation, right? Do you think paintings or art should be used much more like that? And do you have found instruments, ways on how to support this, to give people even more the chance to find their painting or the painting which is touching them, bringing them back to feel more human?
Yeah, actually what started happening more and more over the last years in Florida and in New York is that I had a lot of people come in and they said, oh, is this free? Can we look around? And especially in New York, we were close to some art schools. And we got more and more students coming in, and they really asked just to be around the paintings and to have more time to look at them. And they would sometimes stay at the gallery for hours. And that made me realize that something that we take for granted in Europe, which is access to art and to culture, is not something that's that is so easily attainable here in the US, where maybe not so much in New York, but in, for instance, in Florida, it's very, very expensive to participate in any sort of way, to go to the theater, to go to a museum. So we had that happen a lot also in Florida, where people would call even and say, hey, can we come this Saturday to your gallery? Because we know that you have these Cuban artists. And a lot of them are actually exhibited in museums worldwide. And people were just excited to see a free exhibition where they didn't have to pay for it. And that, first of all, made me very grateful for my upbringing, where we're so used to be able to see all sorts of great cultural for artifacts and buildings and paintings, and it's just all around us. And here, this is a luxury, and that was something that sort of prompted me and also inspired me to do this nonprofit work, where we really focus on lowering that threshold and also taking away people's trepidations, because I have this happen a lot, that people come in and say, oh, I don't know anything about art. And they have this sort of initial reaction that's very, I don't want to call it timid, but almost like they say, oh, this is not for me. And I'm always astonished, because why not? You know, this should be for everybody. And it's a visual medium, and it should be accessible to anyone, because it's not supposed to be decoded by academic gatekeepers. It's really something that should be accessible to anybody who's interested.
Absolutely. And I think it's, of course, also a chance to invite these people which normally have no opportunity to go there and bring them in this field, show them a lot of them by watching painting, triggering something in their own body and their own mind, which awakes something in them, something beautiful, which drives them just in being in communication with this to their own life, to their own ideas, to their own visions, right?
Yeah, I think also to what you said before that it's almost spiritual. I mean, it's not too long ago that notion was very dominant. That also during the Renaissance, that whenever you drew a portrait, you would sort of show the divine spark in each human, that we're made in God's image. So it was traditionally art was always very spiritually imbued, and this sort of iconoclasm that happened in modernity is something very recent. So I think if people react spiritually to art on a deeper emotional level, I think that's really how it is to be experienced, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And it's just a modern approach where we have sort of taken that divine spark and that magic out of art, because we have commodified it so much. So I don't think this is something that was like inherent. I think this is a very recent development.
I like that you think like this. And maybe this is also the reason why you decided that a nonprofit foundation was a natural next step for your work, right?
Yes, it's something that I really chose to do out of conviction, and because it gives a lot back to me. I love doing this, and I love putting this together and starting new initiatives, and yeah, also seeing the result, really the results really fast, how you sort of change young minds, even in New York, where you have all sorts of people from all walks of life coming in, and to really have that openness and say, you know what, everyone's welcome here. You know, this is not exactly, it's not just a commodified good that we're selling here. This is really also, you know, culture that should belong to all of us and should be unifying and not gate kept.
What concrete kinds of initiatives or concrete programs do you hope and are you planning the foundation will develop?
So we started out with art courses, and I connected that with volunteer work down here. So we with foster youth and but youth from all walks of life, and we have a great teacher who has taught in different art schools already, and she's really great. So this is the first step, and then we are planning a lot of different initiatives from like early childhood up to basically any age, to what I mentioned before, to lower that threshold for people. We are also doing free concerts, like screenings of opera, theater, so to really put that joy back in. Yeah, I don't want to use the word consuming culture, because that's the problem, not the solution, I think, but in sort of in enjoying this together as a community, and not to put these big barriers in the way all the way, where people have to decide whether they feed their family or go to like one theater screening or something. So there's a lot in the making, but so far it's been very fulfilling and a lot of fun.
That sounds great, and it sounds also great, your mission that you combine something not just under the roof first of making profit, but first under the roof of driving things further, supporting and giving something back to society for moving into the right direction. And of course, at the areas and or at the locations where you are, You meet people which you can support also by doing this, by behaving in that way, right? How can philanthropic culture initiatives create meaningful opportunities for artists and communities? I mean, you said already that you're planning some events or you've done this already, also working with kids. Is there anything what you would say is something bigger or also something more concrete?
How people could get involved, for instance, or so
Yes.
I that is my ideal vision, to not to do everything ourselves, but to really become an umbrella, so to speak, for a lot of great initiatives that are already out there and that are already working. Because the other problem is that a lot of people are not aware of great programs that are already running and that do fantastic work already, and people simply have, just need to be sort of pushed in the right direction. So the plan is to expand here from the location that we already have, and then have enough room, and maybe also like do different start different locations where we can introduce people to those programs and be almost like an incubator or a hub, where people know, okay, sort of there's an EV foundation there. Let's see what's happening, and let's see what we can access. And that can really contain anything, also from great online classes, education, we're actually also planning a cooking class here, sort of a culinary class for kids. So it the umbrella is relatively wide, as long as it sort of empowers people through access to culture and education. So that's sort of the larger vision.
Is there a story which, or something, an experience which you would like to share with us? What brought you there? What was maybe like this that you said, yes, and now I understand why it's so important for kids, or now I understand why it's important to do this step for society? Anything which touched you and you would like to share?
Yeah, actually, I worked with a very troubled teen as a volunteer, and she lives in a group home, and she was a so-called a runner, and she was always considered by everybody involved, by all the institutions, from the judge to child protective services, as a problem. But she expressed interest in art and painting, and we provided her with painting materials, and she started doing really beautiful drawings. And what touched me the most is that when she went in front of the judge and they were like reevaluating her case, the judge asked me and said, "Oh, is there anything you would like to add?" And I said, "Well, she's also an artist, and you could really sense how everything, the demeanor changed of everybody, because up until then she was only seen as a problem. But the minute you mentioned, oh, she's also an artist, she expresses herself, she became a human being, and it gave her some sort of inherent dignity." And I think this is what a lot of people forget, that we as human beings, it is our most a sort of deepest urge to express ourselves in some sort of way, and it gives us dignity, and it gives us a sort of personhood outside of what the world sort of projects onto us. So I think it can create a lot of resilience in children, and a great sense of self outside of all of that, what we also talked before, all of that media frenzy and the craziness that's out there. I think it really creates a strong inner sanctuary and bastion against that loud noise that the world creates right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I like this what you're what you say with what you point out with the word noise, because yes, it is a kind of noise where the people have to get along with that. And I mean, looking at you, you have of course also a lot of noise around you. You have the artist with their life and maybe with the expectations, earning money because of you. getting or having an having a, getting another lifestyle because of you getting popular or not, failing or winning. And you have a lot of people on the other hand which are maybe used to get what they want, but they need to have a guide who show them what they should want or what is right or good for them. And on the other hand, they might have also expectation that everything works with a snip and they don't need to do anything and might be able to learn. With other words, how do you keep yourself that fresh and relaxed with all these challenges, nice ones, but also really, I could imagine also sometimes hard ones.
I box a lot. that really helps me to get all anxieties out. And I have to say the lifestyle here, being in Florida, being in the sun, going for long walks with my dogs is a big part of that. But I think also to really believe in what you do, that sort of keeps you going, and is a great source of strength. And great conversations like this and sort of the connections you make on the way. That's really the most inspiring thing. The people you meet, that's what I love the most about doing this. The different walks of life, the different people that walk into your gallery, the different conversations you have, that's so enriching that that sort of also helps you to filter out the noise because you really focus in on that, on those great conversations that you also have with the artists about their experience. And that is, that's very fueling to me.
That's something I can really imagine. And what have been the most important lessons you learned while building a business from the ground up and developing it into something which is working worldwide?
One of the most important things I would say is to only listen to people who have also built something from the ground up. That's the only advice I would ever listen to again, because those people will also always be the one who see you struggling, and they see you do, and they sort of see the vision with you because they've done that too. And when you're like in a stage where you feel especially vulnerable, you feel like, oh my God, this is so messy. Those are the people that are really the most important. Again, relationships are incredibly important. I think friendship and the people you meet on the way, that is so, it keeps you sane, it keeps you sort of on track, and that is the most rewarding about everything. So it's really about the relationships you build. I would say that's the most important lesson.
And if you think now, let's say 10 years ahead, what would you hope the EVAE Art Foundation has achieved?
I would love for the programs sort of to be self-starters. Of course, reach is always a great vision, that you have you're present in different cities, and but also, I mean, online, you know, that people really have an idea and about us and what we do, and say, hey, let's see, you know, what we can learn there, or what programs they do, and really make use of it, you know, to be useful to a lot of people, and sort of have an international network just of great people who are doing great work and are connecting through that initiative.
Sounds great. And I love if I could be a bit of part of that, supporting that.
You already are. I'm so grateful.
Thank you so much. It means a lot to me, Carla, because you're doing such a great job giving people, putting people into light, giving people visibility and others the spirituality or the connection to that, where they are and where they come from, and what maybe should drive them for the further term to make the world a better place. Thank you so much for doing this, and I'm very happy about being a part of this and bringing this to the next level I'm really much looking forward to it. Carla, thank you so much for being part of this show. And after a small break, we will continue then with Noelia.
Thank you, Annabelle. Thanks for having
UK
me.
House Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome here on the show, Dr. Noelia. I'm very happy to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Annabelle.
So today's guest is a voice at the intersection of science, sustainability, and society. Dr. Noelia Noel is an astrophysicist, director of employability and physics, FHEA, and TEDx speaker whose work spans over 100 publications and leads pioneering initiatives on space sustainability and inclusive scientific careers. Most recently, she delivered a TEDx talk on how satellites are reshaping our night sky and what that means for the future of Earth and astronomy, reminding us that science is not only about discovery, but about stewardship of our planet and our shared heritage above. Her research and advocacy bridge astrophysics, environmental science, and social justice, inspiring audiences to think differently about the cosmos and our collective role in shaping a sustainable future. Dr. Noelia, I already said a few times sustainable and sustainability. And as we all know, this is not the trend word currently. This is not a word and the topic most of the people are talking about. We have, unfortunately, other topics which are ruling currently the world, but it is important to have people standing up for that. What was your earliest memory that sparked your love for the stars, but also loved your love for sustainability?
So one of my earliest memories is looking up at the night sky as a child and feeling both curiosity and wonder. I grew up in a very dark place where you could see so many stars and in the southern hemisphere, so I could even see galaxies at naked eye. So that was the first time that I, you know, since I have a sense of memory, I remember thinking, yeah, this is, you know, the most beautiful thing. And sustainability obviously became, I wouldn't say an afterthought, but it became very related to that, but it came more like in the past 10 years, because when many people think about space, we think it's infinite, but there actually is a very small region of the sky, and around Earth there are satellites operating in this very fragile atmosphere. In a few years, We've gone from having few thousand satellites to potentially having hundreds of thousands, and that has consequences. It has consequences to those kids who, like me, all those years ago, was looking up, because now the sky is filled with these streaks. But also, it has consequences for environment. These satellites are interfering with the chemical composition of our atmosphere, and also, you know, about safety. Launchers and parts of these satellites fall from the skies. So, but don't get me wrong, we do need satellites. Satellites are what connect people from remote places. Satellites are what allows us to have international transactions. Also, they help us monitor our climate. So we need to find, like with everything, a good balance.
Absolutely. And I mean, I haven't put this question down, but I mean, what you are describing is so huge. It's so unbelievable, massive. Is this something where you would say it is more frightening, or it could give the people, even young people, more trust, more braveness, more hope about what is possible to make the world a better place?
Definitely. So the night sky is one of our oldest shared human experiences. So for thousands of years, the night sky guided navigation, inspired science, shaped cultures, and connected us really with the universe. So today, for the first time in the history, we risk losing that natural night sky. And so we need to keep protecting it, but not from fear. We need to do it from culture, from heritage, from our relationship with the planet and the cosmos. So when we look up, we're seeing our place in the universe, and that's a perspective that is worth protecting. So we should be mindful about what, you know, we humans are doing to the space and to the night sky, but not with fear, never with fear, always with hope and with, you know, a sense of readiness, of action.
What is the biggest misconception about space sustainability, what you would say?
So I would say that space sustainability means really designing technology responsibly from the start. Sustainability should be built in our science, not an afterthought. So we can benefit from satellites, as I said before, from communication, climate monitoring, disaster response, without permanently damaging the night sky that belongs to all humanity. So, as I was saying before, many people think that space is infinite, and you know, we shouldn't think about sustainability in space because we have so many problems here on Earth, as you mentioned before. But we need to think that, for example, our ozone layer is so tiny; it's smaller than a centimeter, and so we need to protect that. So when we're talking about sustainability in space, it's not a blue sky thought or an abstract thought. It's actually a very much a tangible thought.
Absolutely. And I mean, you grew up in Argentina. Would you say that this is a special place where you could get special feelings, special ground or closeness to this topic? And do you have role models which guided you through this to become the person you are?
Well, yeah, so as I was saying, growing up in Argentina gave me a strong sense of curiosity about the natural world because my village is very far from polluted cities, and so the sky was so full of stars. I could see objects at naked eye, but at the same time, I was very far from major scientific centers for astronomy. So astronomy, astrophysics, the space felt really mysterious and also exciting. So I will say that although I had very good teachers, my role model was a TV star that when I was a child was very popular, called Carl Sagan. In the early 80s, he had this TV show. It was only 13 episodes, but they were like, so even when I couldn't understand most of it, I became fascinated by our shared heritage that is a space. And then he wrote a book called Contact. And that was the first book I remember reading. And the main character, Ellie, she was a girl like me, and she was very strongly connected to her dad, like me. I was very close to my dad. And so that's actually what inspired me to pursue a career in astrophysics.
Oh, that's interesting. And what would you tell small kids when you would go into a school and make them interested in the field you are working in?
Oh, well, this is a very interesting question and very important. And I work with lots of children, not only here in the UK, but across the world. I'm very passionate about exciting them about science and discovery. What I say is that there are moments when the path is not straightforward. So science doesn't need to be a linear path. So if we don't get very good grades at primary school, so we have some issues throughout our teenage years that are very complicated, that shouldn't put you off from still trying to pursue a career in what you're passionate about, whether it's science or archaeology, geography, physics. You need to try and pursue your passion. As I say, I went to a very normal school in Argentina. My family didn't go to university, so I'm the first one in my family to go to university. But because my parents always encouraged me to pursue my dreams, that's exactly what I did. And it hasn't been easy all the time. There are many challenges. But we always have to have our line of sight, to focus.
Yeah, very interesting. And if you go into that, I mean, being or dealing with the cosmic, dealing with these huge, huge topics, isn't that sometimes also quite interesting to see the things, everything further also from this other angle?
Yeah. So it's good to have different perspectives, and so you know, with the benefit of hindsight, we always can say things that we could have done differently. And this is something that I use to motivate others. So what I see a lot, especially in those little girls who for me are minorities in science, or those from minoritized groups or hidden audiences that we have all around the world, like those people who people don't think about, like young carers, those siblings who are looking after those the brother or sister who has special needs, and they don't realize that they are being a young carer. So what I say is, you know, we need to provide them with the access. The motivation is there. Many people have motivation, but access is not always visible. So that's something that I think is very important to always reinforce.
Yeah, I mean, dealing with your own life, structuring, organizing, but also keeping your mind healthy. What are your rituals?
Oh, so I have my dog, my very small dog called Manuel, and he is my therapy. I also do journaling. I always have like my journals here, and I write down things, really positive things that happen, things that I wanted to happen differently, and also what I want to do tomorrow or in 10 years or when I retire. So even like a few sentences, it really helps. And also, doing some sports every single day, some little physical activity is so important.
Absolutely. So, last question I can drop you for today. What is one dream project you hope to pursue next?
So my main line of work is understanding how galaxies form and evolve, actually. And when people ask me, why do we care about galaxies? I say, well, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't because of the strong forces of our galaxy that hold on the heavy elements that are expelled when a supernova explodes. So those elements are held by our galaxy, and they form stars. And when you form a star, you form a planet. And obviously, we're here because we have a planet. So my next project is to try and understand a little bit better how galaxies form and how they evolve. But also on the side part, my big work is to try to help those young hidden audiences to get excited about astronomy and space. And I just recently won a grant from the Science and Technology Foundation to encourage youngsters to come into science. So these two things are quite different but connected, interconnected.
Thank you so much, Noelia. I hope that you can introduce a lot of people worldwide about the mission you are sharing. And I hope that also that what you say is loud enough to convince many people in the world to understand that we have to keep our cosmic sustainable, because it's one we share all. And it's, as you said, where we come from, but where we might also go to. So thank you so much for sharing this insight with us. And thank you so much for this inspiring exchange. I really wish we could continue together here, but it comes now to an end. And thank you so much for being here in the show.
Thank you.
So I hope that you took something for yourself out of this show. That wraps up our episode of We Empower, the weekly radio show dedicated to celebrating the strength, resilience, and limitless potential of men and women around the globe. Join us again next week as we continue on this empowering journey, sharing great stories of triumph, upliftment, and empowerment. Your presence and engagement mean the world to us, and we appreciate you taking the time to tune in. Remember, this time is a gift for you to discover new inspiration, embrace exciting insights, and find the motivation to live life to the fullest. Don't hesitate to get involved. Your voice is valued, and together we can make a difference. Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, next week, keep shining and empowering others. Together we arise.
Ooh.